we started recording these last week so that if there are people that like to become members and they can't come to the Tuesday classes, we can put the PowerPoints and the talks on the website, and that way they can learn about the various facets of Krishna consciousness online. And each week we covered a different topic. We talked about japa one week, kirtan another week, prasadam, of course. Last week I spoke for an hour and 7 minutes on how to set up a home altar. When I was putting it together, I thought, well, this is going to be too short. This is only been 20 minutes long, but I had spent it on an hour and 7 minutes. So today's show is about Tulsi, and see a nice altar there with Tulsi, and then Radha Krishna, and then a cow in the background. I was able to get a lot of nice pictures and a lot of really, really good information about Tulsi. So this is called The Glories of Srimati Tulsi Devi. And this is a quote by Lord Shiva, the bottom part of which it's a little hard to see. Let's see if I can prop it up a little bit more. Anyway, Lord Shiva asked his son, that's too high. Okay. So Lord Shiva asked Kartikeya, and you can see Kartikeya here in the picture. And the question that Lord Shiva asks, let's see if I can make that a little smaller. Is which tree or plant is capable of giving love of Godhead? And this is Lord Shiva's answer. And this is described in the Padma Purana, where Lord Shiva replies to Kartikeya, "My dear son of all trees and plants, Tulsi Devi is the topmost. She is all auspicious, the fulfiller of all desires, completely pure, and most dear to Lord Krishna, and the topmost devotee of all." It says that Lord Krishna brought Tulsi Devi from the spiritual world in the form of a plant. Actually, Vrindavan, the place where Lord Krishna appeared, Vrinda means Tulsi, and Van means forest. So Vrindavan means a forest of Tulsis. And when Krishna descended from the spiritual world, he brought Vrinda Devi. And Vrindavan is actually her abode. Nothing goes on in Vrindavan that it's not orchestrated by Vrinda Devi or Tulsi Devi. Not a creeper grows, not a wind blows, but that's not organized by Tulsi Devi. And the purpose is to increase the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So he brought Vrinda Devi and he planted her in the form of the Tulsi plant in this material world. Tulsi is the essence of all devotional activities. Without Tulsi leaves, Lord Krishna does not like to accept flowers, foodstuff, sandalwood paste. In fact, anything without Tulsi leaves is not looked upon by Lord Krishna. Not only does he not accept it, he doesn't even look at it. One who worships Lord Krishna daily with Tulsi leaves attains the results of all kinds of austerities, charities, and fire sacrifices. In fact, he does not have any other duties to perform, and he has realized the essence of all scriptures. So here's a picture of Tulsi, and she's right by the Ganges River. It's a Tulsi plant. There's also a deity of Tulsi Devi. They're on a pillar, and it's right by the Ganges River. And it says that just in the same way that the Ganges purifies everyone who bathes in them, in the waters of the Ganges, similarly, Tulsi also purifies those who bathe in the water of the Ganges as well. Remember, it was Advaita Acharya who saw the pitiful condition of human society 500 years ago. He saw that it was rife with voidism and impersonalism, and he called down Lord Chaitanya by worshiping Ganges water and Tulsi and crying in a very loud-like voice, "Lord Chaitanya, please come and rescue people in this pitiful age." And the cries of Advaita Acharya actually penetrate into the spiritual world and reach the ears of Lord Krishna. But the Tulsi Devi is what actually attracted him to come into this world. Lord Krishna lives wherever there's Tulsi. For this reason, one should plant Tulsi Devi at one's home and worship nicely. See, there's many well-to-do Indians, and because it's a warm climate in India, they have an open center of the house. The center of the house might be an open courtyard. In fact, in our Vrindavan temple, the very center of the temple is open. And they'll have a little pillar, and they'll put a box, and they'll have tulsi. And every day they'll water tulsi and circumambulate tulsi. And it says if you increase the life of tulsi by watering her, you also increase your life. And when you circumambulate tulsi three times, it says it's equivalent to going all around the universe. Because we all have material desires, and we're always wondering, well, what would that be like, or how would I enjoy this, or could I get this, or could I go here, or could I go there? But when you circle tulsi, it's as if you've been to all those places and all those desires are satisfied. You get them out of your system. So then you can more seriously concentrate on pure devotional service. All forms of ghosts and demons run away from that place where tulsi is planted, and all kinds of sinful reactions are destroyed when one comes close to Tulsi Devi. One who makes a garden of Tulsi Devi gets the results of all charities and of 100 fire sacrifices. In Utah, it's been a little hard to grow Tulsi Devi. It seems after about 3 or 4 years, and she gets about this high, and then just something seems to hit all the Tulsi Devis. But in places like Los Angeles and warmer climates, you have whole forests full of tulsi that grow outside. If we were to ever seriously grow tulsi here, we'd have to have a greenhouse at the very, very least. One who puts into his mouth or on his head the tulsi leaves after they have been offered to Lord Krishna attains the abode of Lord Krishna. So you don't actually pick the leaves green. You wait until they're just a little bit yellow or a little bit brown, or else if they've fallen. And you can also pick the manjaris also. In India, I don't know where they all come from. I mean, it's just amazing. You've seen this yourself. You showed in Vrindavan all the garlands that people make of tulsi manjaris. I mean, just unbelievable. Just thick, thick garlands of tulsi manjaris. And they offer them to the deity. The manjaris are the little seeds-like, seeds and leaves here. These are the manjaris here.
And in Krishna Balaram Temple? Yes, in front of, they sell plenty different.
Yeah, there are all kinds of sellers on the street there. In the morning after Mangalarti, the most common time that we worship Tulsi is we do Mangalarti and then we do the Tulsi Puja. And all the devotees assemble and then they circumambulate. You see them circumambulating here. Tulsi Dev, and that starts off the day nicely and properly. The devotees offer obeisances with the Tulsi Pranama Mantra. Vrindai Tulsi Devai Priyaye Kishvashchita Vishnu Bhakti Pradidevi Satyavatinamo Namaha. They say that three times, and then they chant the Namo Namo Tulasi Krishna Prayasi Namo Namo. The pujari will offer incense, a ghee lamp, and offer some flowers. And then the devotees will go and take a little spoonful of charnamrita and they'll place it in the soil, and they'll also touch the soil and touch their foreheads as well. And then when they circumambulate, they say, Yani kani chapapani brahma hatyadikani cha tani tani pranakshanti pradikshana pade pade. It says the worship of Tulsi and the circumambulation of Tulsi is so powerful that brahma hatya, it can even counteract the sin of killing a Brahmin. That's how powerful. That doesn't recommend that you go out, but it says that it can even counteract that sin. It's so very, very powerful. From the Skanda Purana, we have this quote. Tulsi is all auspicious in all respects, simply by seeing, simply by touching, by remembering, simply by praying to, simply by bowing before, simply by hearing about. And that's what we're doing today. We're actually hearing about Tulsi, and we'll have lots of nice stories and all during the course of this presentation. Simply by bowing before her, and hopefully when Hanuman comes, we'll finish off with a nice little Tulsi Puja too. We've got Tulsi right present here before us as we're giving this presentation. There is always auspiciousness. Anyone who comes in touch with the Tulasi tree in the above mentioned ways lives eternally in the Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world. This is from the Padma Purana, and here's a murti. See this beautiful murti here of Tulsi Devi, or Vrinda Devi. The Lord of the three worlds takes abode in the village or house where Tulsi is grown. In such a house, no one suffers calamities like poverty, illness, or separations from dear ones. A occasionally we'll get people who ask us if we can give them a tulsi plant. And it was Prabhupada's instruction not to give anyone a tulsi plant. Because tulsi will only grow in an atmosphere where there's Krishna conscious. So if tulsi grows to a certain point and then we give them to someone, they take it to a home where there's no Krishna consciousness. You know, there's just TV and videos and, you know, all kinds of nonsense. And tulsi dies, then we're responsible for that. So we can't give out tulsi plants, but we can give out tulsi seeds. That way people can grow them themselves. And if there's bhakti, if there's Krishna consciousness in the home, the tulsi will grow. And if there isn't, then she won't grow from those seeds. Tulsi leaf is very, very dear to Lord Vishnu. All Vishnu tattva deities require profuse tulsi leaves. Lord Vishnu likes garlands of tulsi leaves. See all these tulsis here around the temple? And that's what we're just talking about. Lord Vishnu likes profuse garlands of tulsi. And that's really followed in India. You get so many, you don't even know where so many tulsis could possibly come from, but there's so many garlands. And all the Vishnu tattva deities, that means Rama, Narasimha, wherever there's Kurma, Varaha, Matsya, all those deities are worshipped with tulsi leaves. But we must be very careful that tulsi leaves be not be placed on the feet of anyone except Lord Vishnu in his different forms. So that means we wouldn't use tulsi leaves to worship Lord Shiva. We wouldn't use tulsi leaves to worship Ganesh. We would only use them to worship Lord Vishnu or his plenary expansions. It says we can't even put tulsi leaves on the feet of Radharani. And that means we couldn't do them for Sita either, or for Lakshmi, or for Saraswati, or any other of the female expansions of the Lord. And we should not put them on the feet of the spiritual master either. The tulsi leaves are entirely reserved for being placed on the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, we don't put the tulsi in the feet of Radharani, but we can put them in Radharani's hands so that she can then offer them to Krishna. And you'll notice here, with the emphasis of offering tulsi to the feet of Krishna, that's our way of approaching Krishna. We don't try to look eye level with Krishna. We simply meditate initially on his feet and go from there up. So our meditation is on the feet of Krishna, and the tulsi is offered to the feet of Krishna, so it's a nice fit. It's a perfect combination. Tulsi is so dear to Lord Krishna, and tulsi is offered to the feet of Lord Krishna, and we're really not supposed to jump ahead and meditate on the higher forms of the Lord, but always think of ourselves as a dust of Adam at the lotus feet of the Lord. So here's a story about Tulsi Devi. One time she incarnated as the daughter of King Kaushadvaja, and she was married to Jalandhar. Now Jalandhar, I don't know how he's classified exactly as a demon or not, but you just like different fearsome personalities get their strength from boons. Like Ravana had his strength from that he couldn't be killed by a man. Hiranyakashipu had his strength not by land or sea or day or night. Well, Jalandhar had his strength that as long as he had a chaste and faithful wife, no one could defeat him. So the chastity, the faithfulness of Tulsi to Jalandhar made him unconquerable. And there was no way that Tulsi would even think of man or look at another man. Maybe her husband wasn't an ideal character. Maybe he was even a little demoniac. But that didn't change her attitude of single-minded devotion and faithfulness to her husband. The problem was, as long as Tulsi was faithful to her husband, no one could defeat him. And so then he went and defeated all the demigods, who then went to Lord Vishnu and asked for help. What are we going to do? As long as his wife is faithful to him, nobody can beat him. And his wife is never not going to be faithful to him. So what are we going to do? Lord Vishnu assumed the form of Jalandhar. He assumed the form of Jalandhar and he approached Tulsi. And she was only fooled for a second. I mean, nothing happened or anything, not even close to it. But for like 1 second, she thought that this is my husband. That's all it took, just a second. Now, in that 1 second, she wasn't faithful to her husband. She didn't realize it. She was tricked. And he looked just like her, and she figured it out in a second. But that was all it took, that one moment when she broke her chastity to her husband, and then her husband was killed. So, then Tulsi, she cursed Lord Vishnu that he would become a stone. He cursed Lord Vishnu that he would become a stone. And Vishnu was so impressed with the chastity of Tulsi Dev. Of course, they're eternal associates. That he gave her the benediction that she would always reside with him as his consort in Vaikuntha. And he said that in Vaikuntha, she will assume the form of a plant, which would be most suspicious for anyone executing devotional service. Now, here's the stone. Isn't this a nice picture of a Govardhana, Salagram Shila? This is the stone that Tulsi cursed him to be. And then look at what the Salagram Shila is being worshipped with. Tulsi leaves all over.
Yeah.
So they're together. Lord Vishnu is a stone, and Tulsi becomes a plant, and then they're eternally together and worshipped. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, Patram Pushvam Phalam Toyam, Patram means leaf, Pushvam means flower, Phalam means fruit, and Toyam means water. So Patram, when Krishna says Patram, he's especially referring to Tulsi. That actually means Tulsi. Patram means leaf. And any poor man in India can get Tulsi. There's so many Tulsis. So anybody can get a Tulsi leaf and offer it at the Lord Lotus feet. This is an indication of how accessible Lord Krishna wants to make himself, and how anybody of any situation or any status whatsoever can worship the Lord and become perfect. All they have to do is offer a Tulsi leaf, and the Lord, it's the love in which one has to offer it. If one offers the right item with the right attitude, then one will get the right result. Now it says, as I mentioned before, that in Vrindavan, in the Leela Shakti, in the pastimes of Lord Krishna, like we say during the prayers to the spiritual master, Nikunjayuno Ratikeli Siddhai Yayala Biju Piyurakshek Saniya, that Lord, the spiritual master is always engaged in making various tasteful arrangements for the love affairs of Radha and Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan. So Vrindadevi is in charge of all those arrangements. There's Radha and then there's Krishna, and Vrindadevi orchestrates everything that goes on. The breezes, the aromas, the waters, the sounds, everything is orchestrated by Vrindadevi. Vrindavan is her abode, and everything is done so only for the pleasure of Krishna. She has many confidential associates that help her and make sure that everything is just right. She controls how the wind blows, when and where it rains, how the trees bend, and so many other things for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. Vrindavan is completely under the control of Vrindadevi. Without her mercy, it is not possible to even approach the confidential pastimes of Radha Krishna, even as an audience. Even being allowed into Vrindavan Dham indicates that one has received some mercy from Vrindadevi. Even if you just go there, it means that Vrindadevi let you. And there are many people that, you know, they just never, some or other, make it to Vrindavan, you know. They never make it to Vrindavan. One devotee got to Vrindavan after many years, and he just started walking into the area of Vrindavan, and a dog bit him. A dog with yellow teeth, a street dog. And they didn't have the right shots, so they had to fly him right back to America. I don't know if he ever got to Vrindavan later on, but he didn't make it that trip. He'd wanted to for so many years, and he just got to the edge of Vrindavan, and then he had to go back again. This is a picture of Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, as you know, was born a Muslim, and he had his little hermitage in the area where he came to do his bhajan kutir. And outside of his hut, there was a tulsi. Haridas Thakur had no worldly possessions. All he had was the tulsi bush, a little place to chant, and he had his tulsi beads, and he had his tulsi neck beads, his kunti mala. And he was approached by a prostitute. There was a conspiracy organized by the local Muslim magistrate who wanted to disgrace Haridas Thakur. He thought that Haridas Thakur was faking it, and so this Ramachandra Khan hired a beautiful prostitute to go and to approach Haridas Thakur in the middle of the night and to entice him to succumb to her charms. And so the prostitute had some piety, and when she came to the hermitage of Haridas Thakur, she noticed the tulsi, and she bowed down before the tulsi. In India, everybody will bow down before the tulsi. Everybody will respect the tulsi. So Haridas Thakur put her off one night. He said, "I haven't finished chanting my rounds, but if you come back tomorrow night, I'll try to hurry and get my rounds done, and we'll maybe do something." And so the next night she came, and again it was getting to midnight, and Haridas chanted 300,000 rounds a day, and so he said, "I'm not going," because as soon as midnight came, then he would have to start again on 300,000. So he said, at second night, he said, "Tomorrow night is the last night of the month. And so if I finish, I'll have a little extra time." So each time when she came, she worshipped the tulsi. She bowed down and she worshipped the tulsi. And then what happened was, when she came the third night, she had become a pure devotee. She had become remorseful and full of shame for her having tried to seduce Haridas Thakur. And you see the tulsi is still here. And she asked what she could do to atone for all her sinful life. And Haridas Thakur said, he said, "I'm leaving. I would have left 3 days ago, but I stayed to show mercy on you. But now I'm leaving, and if you want to get rid of all your sins, you just stay here and you just worship tulsi. Because I'm leaving, and so Krishna's arrangement that you come, and when I leave, then you'll be here to worship tulsi." And he said, "Take off all your fine jewels and clothes and everything, and then just stay here." So she did that, and she was blessed with devotion from tulsi. And she became very famous. Even though she'd given away all of her wealth to the temple, still, everybody heard the news of this prostitute who had become a sadhu, and who had given up everything, was chanting. So she became very famous, and many people came and brought offerings and gifts. So she didn't even know what to do with all the opulence that came. Well, that was due to the mercy of her having offered her respects to tulsi. As you know, our two most important things to Vaishnavas, one of which is our tulsi beads. This is a pair of tulsi beads, and you'll see tulsi beads made from rosewood, you'll see them made with neem wood, you'll see japa beads. You'll see japa beads made with rosewood or even semi-precious stone or neem wood. But Prabhupada said the best is the tulsi. Of all the different choices that you can opt for getting the japa beads, the best one is the tulsi. And of course, here's a bead bag. We keep the beads inside the bag so it doesn't touch our feet or get dirty. And the interesting thing is that the tree will never be killed for its wood. People will only wait until the tree dies a natural death, and then they'll take the wood for the tulsi. And obviously the larger branches and trunk would be used for the japa beads, and then the smaller parts of the tulsi, they would be used for the kunti mala beads. Mala means garland, so japa mala is a garland of japa beads, and kunti mala are the neck beads that you put on. These are called our dog collar, that we're not God, like some gurus claim, but we're the dogs of God, and this is our dog collar. So in 1897, I think I'd say it's actually supposed to be 1857, or 1871, in fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a famous poem called Saranagati, meaning the song of surrender. And in that poem, he talks about going to the spiritual world and retiring and just going to Vrindavan and living with Krishna and the gopis. And one of the verses of that says He says, what I will do is I will put on the garb that is dear to the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, including the 12 Vaishnava Tilak markings on my body, and you see them here, and beautiful beads of tulsi wood around my neck. They're just a little bit here in the shadow. But these items, the tilak and the tulsi, are very, very dear to Lord Krishna. Prabhupada often would get disturbed when he'd see devotees without tilak on. He would say that your forehead is like a slaughterhouse when you don't have tilak on. Sometimes we also don't wear it when we're going out shopping and so on and so forth. But Prabhupada himself, being very strict Vaishnava that he was and being the guru, he didn't let people get away with going around without tilak. If you were going to be around Prabhupada, you'd have a tilak on for sure. And he said that even up until, well, this is 40 years ago, but 40 years ago, Prabhupada said as recently as 50 years ago, so probably about 90 years ago, he said many, many, many people in India wore tilak, even high court judges. Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself was a high court judge, but he lived over 100 years ago. But even 110 years ago, but even 60, 70, 80 years ago, even high court judges used to wear tilak. There's one story as well of a Muslim who ran a factory in which mostly Hindus worked, and most of them were Vaishnavas. And it was their custom to wear tilak. So every day, hundreds and hundreds of Vaishnavas would come to work and they'd wear tilak. And one day the Muslim banned the tilak. He said, I don't want anyone coming on the morrow with tilak. If they come, I'll fire them. So all the workers then they came the next day without tilak on, except for one. And this one man walked through and the Muslim, he said, you come here. He said, because you have the strength of your faith, you have the strength of your convictions, I allow you can wear tilak every day. The rest of you, no. So that's what happens at initiation. When we get initiation, the three things that happen, the three most significant things that happen are what? You get your name, you get your spiritual name, you get your neck beads from your guru, get your neck beads. Usually the neck beads are going to be on a little leaf plate in front of you, and your god brother or someone will then take and tie them around you at that time. And then you get your japa mala beads here. Your guru will hand you your japa. And the guru will have chanted one round on those beads earlier in the day as well. The beads that I received from Prabhupada we were initiated sometime in 70 by mail. But he actually chanted our beads and then gave us Brahman initiation in 71. And so he gave me a nice set of tulsi beads. And then I think it was in the 100th year of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. No, it wasn't. That was in 86. No, it wasn't 86. Anyway, we were in India at Mayapur, and it was an eclipse. It was a full moon eclipse. And what you do during a full moon eclipse is you go down into the Ganges, you go waist deep into the Ganges, and you chant Hari Bol, but when the eclipse is taking place, you say Gayatri, with waist deep in the Ganges. So we all went down and we were bare-chested and we had our bead bags on and we said Gayatri. And it was very late at night. It was like 11 o'clock at night. And then someone started some water wrestling. There was some water wrestling that went on. And in the course of that, somehow or other my beads, they went into the Ganges, and that was the last I saw them. So that was probably, I don't know, 76 or so, 5 or so years after I'd got. But so I lost my initiation beads, but I lost them to Mother Ganges. So if you're going to lose them in the Ganges like that. There was another devotee in Australia, Bhakti Robert. He was a really nice fellow, and he was coming to the temple from high school. He would come from high school, and then he graduated from high school. And then he became a devotee. He was very handsome, very intelligent, very articulate. And he went eventually to Japan, and he collected, along with Guru Kripa's men, and they practically built the Vrindavan, the Mayapur temple, with their collections. And they took a break one time, and they were in Rishikesh, and they were at the Lakshman Jula, the bridge, which is named after Lakshman, Ram's brother. And the rapids are quite brisk there. There's a lot of white water. So the group of young brahmacharis, they went for a swim. And he went under the water and never reappeared. He's got, no one, I don't know if they even ever found his body. So that was certainly unfortunate. But then again, I mean, you have to see the silver lining that it was the Ganges and it was in the holy place, Rishikesh. So it may very well be that such a person who meets their death in that way gets a great, gets to leapfrog back home, back to Godhead, or at least gets to advance significantly. So this was the first initiation that Prabhupada did. And this was in Jhansi around 1952. He had that little building in Jhansi, and on Sunday, was it Sunday or last Sunday, that building was taken away. He had it from 50 to 54, and he wanted to get a permanent lease on it. And just as he was asking the owner for a permanent lease, some rich lady came by, and she wanted it for a pleasure house or for somewhere for a seamstress to stay. And she said, oh, you know, this spiritual stuff is neither here nor there. I'll pay you more money, you give it to me. So he lost the lease on that place. And at that time, he thought, Krishna, I'm sure you've all felt this too. You think, Krishna, I'm just trying to serve you. Give me a break here, you know. I mean, I've been working so hard, I got so little, and then you just taken it away from me, you know, or you're not giving it to me. You know, the results are just, it's just so niggardly in proportion to the efforts and expenditure we're doing. So Prabhupada said he felt that way, you know, I have so little and now it's been taken away. But it was Krishna's arrangement. Krishna didn't want him to get stuck in that little place. He wanted him to get out and preach all over the world. And that's why Krishna arranged that he lost that place. But he did make one disciple, a local Indian fellow, whose name was Acharya Prabhakar. And he says his original name was Prabhakar Mishra. So at the time of initiation, Prabhupada said, don't write the Mishra. You are Acharya Prabhakar. And Prabhakar says, he gave me the name and offered me a tulsi mala and put tilak on my forehead and tied a kunti mala around my neck. Those are the only things that Vaishnav needs. Tilak, kunti mala, and tulsi. That's all you need. And many, many Vaishnavs, those are only worldly possessions since hundreds and hundreds of years. So this was Prabhupada's first disciple. And he was a good devotee. The devotees in India met him and all. But it wasn't until, you know, almost 18 years, you know, maybe 52, 62, 72, about 15 years later that he actually started making disciples in America. Even a leaf, a flower, a bit of fruit, or a little water can be offered by any person and will be accepted and offered with love. Prabhupada says there are many instances in history. Simply by tasting the tulasi leaves offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, sages like Sanat Kumara became great devotees. Here's a picture of the four Kumaras sitting on a throne here. And as you know, the four Kumaras are the direct sons of Lord Brahma. So they were created in the very beginning of the universe, and Lord Brahma created them so that they would populate the universe. They were meant to be Prajapatis. But they didn't want to get involved in family life, so they arrested their growth by sheer willpower. And they said, if we never reach puberty, then we'll never be asked to get married. And so they just remained pretty much perpetually as like little one or two or three-year-old boys. And they were impersonalists. They were monists. They believe everything is one. Until they smelled the tulsi, the wind blew into their nostrils, the aroma of tulsi mixed with saffron from the lotus feet of the Lord. And tulsi is often, you can offer saffron, but you can't offer it without tulsi. You can offer sandalwood, but you can't offer it without tulsi. You can offer Ganges water, but you cannot offer it without tulsi. And so it was the devotion, it was the aroma of the tulsi mixed with the saffron that came into the nostrils of the four Kumaras, and then they became, their senses were awakened, and they became devotees. Here are the benefits, and here's the reasons why devotees always wear their tulsis. Sometimes it says that devotees and Brahmins and all, they may wear other beads, like we have our Nisringa malas, our pavitras. There's lotus seeds, there's rope from Lord Jagannath's Racha, you know, they could wear the silk pavitras, that's what I was referring to. I wear those when I'm performing puja, and And so there are various things that you can remove, you can wear, but you don't wear them all the time. You can remove them while bathing or going to the bathroom. But the Kunti mala is worn permanently, these beads here, like that. And it says the reason for that is those beads protect one from bad dreams when you're sleeping. Evil, mischievous spirits can't get in and play with your mind. And when you're driving, that a lot of accidents are caused by mischievous spirits getting in, and especially if you're sleepy or if you're intoxicated or if you're susceptible or vulnerable, then you can be taken over momentarily by mischievous spirits who can cause you to make a wrong move on the road. They can put you to sleep at the wheel for a moment. And so the tulsi helps protect you from spirits, and it helps protect you from accidents which are caused by spirits also. It protects you from attack by weapons, and also protects you from the servants of Yamaraj. It says that when the servants of Yamaraj, the Yamadutas, come to take someone away, and they see that person wearing tulsi, it says they flee like leaves scattered in the wind. Now this is the last slide. In the spiritual world, everything is absolute. There's no such thing as higher or lower. Everyone is full of devotion for Krishna, and there's no envy. Everybody appreciates the devotion that every other soul has, even flowers, even water, even trees. And the one thing that's unanimously appreciated in the spiritual world is the greatness of tulsi. Tulsi reigns very, very high in the spiritual world, and everybody is completely conscious of the super excellent devotion of tulsi. So we can't ignore tulsi or minimize the value of tulsi in this world and expect to get into the spiritual world. Part of qualifying ourselves to go to the spiritual world is to be in the mood of all the inhabitants of the spiritual world. And one of the features of the mood of all the inhabitants of the spiritual world is that they're fully aware of the greatness of tulsi. You won't go to anyone in the spiritual world and mention tulsi, and they say, "Tulsi, who's that? Oh yeah, tulsi." No, you won't get an offhanded, you won't get any different reaction. Everybody is fully in the core of their hearts aware of the super excellent, super wonderful position of tulsi. That's it. That's it.